And this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Where did our music go? Hey, so we're with you today. And today we're going to talk about something that is very close to my heart. We're going to be talking about organizing and clutter. Then we're going to take it a step beyond that. Because there's some questions about organizing and clutter. You know, is organizing okay? Is clutter okay? So we brought on with us Barbara Tacho, with a long A. Barbara Tacho, who wrote a book called Clutter Clearing Choices. Barbara, you with us?
Yes. Hi. How are you today?
Good, good, good. Barbara, let's talk about clutter. First of all, what is clutter?
Well, clutter can be physical clutter, like paper clutter is a huge source of clutter for many of us, as well as other material possessions. It can be mental clutter, ideas kind of falling in and out of our head that we need to act on at some point. It can be emotional clutter. Things can sometimes evoke feelings of guilt or stress and wear us down as emotional clutter. It can even be relationship clutter.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, when does it become a problem?
I think it's the point that it becomes a problem is unique to each person. We all have different personalities and styles and ways of organizing our homes and dealing with our clutter. And I think it becomes a problem at the point that it becomes a frustration and a drain, where items in the house evoke feelings of guilt because you can't get to the projects or tasks or paperwork or sorting of things that need to happen.
All right. We just found our music. It was cluttered. It was around here somewhere. Well, is there normal kind of clutter? Is it like, you know, is it like I look at my desk, and I've got, 100 pieces of paper coming every day in one form or another. And it sits here, and for a while the same stuff will sit here, and then little by little it goes, and it gets replaced by other stuff. Is that clutter? It looks like clutter to me.
I think that's a busy person's life. I think there needs to be a flow in households with physical objects and with paper. Things flow in and need to be processed, and we can't always make decisions on things right away, so things linger around perhaps in a holding file or a pen system. But as long as there's flow, things coming in and things going out, I don't think that that's clutter. That's sort of the work process.
So therefore, relationships are clutter. therefore, if it kind of comes in and then hangs around for a long time, it's not as good. Well, let's talk about cluttered relationships or relationships as clutter, because you have a belief about it, and a lot of the people I researched about this have the same belief, that where you clutter on your life, you clutter in relationships.
I think so, and I think relationships can become clutter when we hang on to certain relationships past the point that they are adding value to our lives. And in fact, perhaps hanging on to those relationships is not only not doing ourselves a favor, but we're not being honest and respectful to the other person in that relationship, and that maybe there becomes a time where they need to be cut loose so they can have new opportunities and new relationships, just like we do.
There's another part of it as well. Now, you said that many of the reasons that we have clutter is because people use things for memorabilia. You think people like to remember things, so they buy souvenirs.
Right.
And they have the cup that reminds them of their dog, who, when they have the knife, the piece of silverware from the restaurant. And people tend to do that. Some people tend to collect memorabilia, and other people don't. Right?
I think that's valid. I think how much memorabilia varies from person to person, and I'm not in favor of necessarily getting rid of all the memorabilia. Perhaps if somebody's hanging on to a collection, one of the things that I talk about in my book is that you want to preserve the memory, but you don't necessarily need to preserve all the things. So you could choose your three best representative samples from the collection or your favorites and possibly consider donating or selling or passing on in the family the rest of those items so that our physical space doesn't get overcrowded with all of those things. So keeping a portion of it is one approach. Another approach is to take a photograph of the collection. So you have a physical record, but it's two-dimensional rather than taking up all that three-dimensional space in our homes. The other thing that's important with memorabilia that you choose to keep is to keep the stories, to have these items out on display, talk about them, tell people in your family why that fork or chipped collector plate or statue or knickknack, whatever it is important, so that at some point in time, if you want those things to stay in the family, which a lot of people do, it will be valued by the other people in the family because they'll know the story. If they don't know the story, when the time comes that perhaps they're settling your estate, the good memories and the important memorabilia could accidentally go out with the trash instead of staying around and being part of that family's history.
Well, might have been better off in the trash in the first place, you know what I mean? But Barbara Tako, speaking with Barbara Tako, who talks about clutter, and she talks about kind of the non-pathological clutter. There are people, and we're going to talk about that today, who have disorders. And the disorder, by disorder, I mean there's a certain pathology that you have where you have, where your brain functions on certain parts and you have one part of it not functioning properly and it gives you a disorganized brain. We're going to talk about that a great deal. So, but we're going to stick with this issue as you see it right now, Barbara.
Okay.
So at the end of every year, in the beginning of every year, every house selling, every place that sells houseware has a big sale on bins. And they have this big sale on bins and people buy bins. And then they take all their stuff and they put it in bins. And then the bins overflow and they put more stuff in the bins. And then the bins become clutter. So, and then there are another group of people who sell, every springtime you'll see these organizers come for sale, and these are desk organizers and things that'll have a place for your scissors and a place for your knife and a place for your pencils, and those too become part of the stuff that you collect because that gets thrown in the side somewhere. So I think the world exploits the disorganized mind by trying to sell it things that are going to help you organize, because I don't think you're going to organize until you're ready to do it.
I very strongly agree with that. I also feel like we need to get rid of the clutter before we worry about organizing what remains. So I try to offer a variety of techniques to help encourage and motivate people to get rid of their clutter, because there really are a variety of ideas and different things work for different people. And if you can get rid of the clutter, then perhaps you can consider the organizing containers for what's left. But I actually, at a point in my life, had container clutter, especially in my children's rooms when they were young. I had all sorts of drawers and bins and plastic boxes with lids, and a lot of those containers were either mostly empty or only partially full and took up a huge volume of space and were clutter by themselves without even talking about the contents of those containers.
I know. I put all of my memorabilia once in a box, but I forgot where I put it. So my memorabilia became unremembered memorabilia, and it appears later. It's a box I took a big box and I called it Treasures. So I have all these little things that I've collected over life, and I throw it in the box called Treasures, and once a year or so I'll add to the box, maybe throw out a couple of things, maybe revisit it.
Right.
For a little bit. But now let's talk about the people who are possibly motivated today to clear up their clutter. And if they want to clear up their clutter, you have in your mind a map, a thing that you could ask them about. By the way, with me, Stephanie Dahmer. I think you've spoken with her before. Hey, Steph?
Yeah.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Stephanie.
So let me see.
Okay, so Barbara, tell us what clutter control means, actually, because I saw that term and I wanted to get more definition for our listener audience.
Well, clutter control is getting rid of the things in life that drag you down and take up too much time and energy to store and maintain and keep in your house and can evoke feelings of guilt. I used to suffer from magazine guilt. I'd have this pile of unread magazines on my nightstand, And it'd make me feel bad when I got up in the morning because I would tell myself I paid good money for that subscription. And I'd see it when I came back from the shower and when I came home from work. And several times a day, just that one pile of magazine clutter was evoking negative feelings. And that I would be a better person if I read that parenting magazine. And so if you have multiple piles of clutter in your house, you're getting hit by some of those negative feelings throughout your house, throughout your day. And controlling clutter is a goal of reducing those to a more manageable level. And that's a different answer for every person, but there are lots of different ways to get rid of it.
Okay, so could you tell us the ways? I know we have a couple in your book of the methods, the 1-2-3-4 box method. Could you tell us what that's about?
Sure. There's the box method, which you set aside a large block of time, like a weekend or at least a whole day if you could, and you systematically move room by room through your house with these four boxes, and it's a box, and you go in, and it's basically a sorting process. So you have a box for trash, you have a box for donations, you have a box for things you find in one room of your home that belong somewhere else, and I used to think that was kind of a silly box to have. Why couldn't I, if I found socks wedged in the cushions of my family room couch, why couldn't I just take them to where my washer and dryer are? And then one day I did that and I saw wet clothes in the washer and dry wrinkled clothes in the dryer and more dry wrinkled clothes in the laundry baskets. And pretty soon I was up in my bedroom folding laundry and my sorting boxes were sitting down in the family room by themselves. So having a box to keep things on task where you put things that you find in one room that belong somewhere else and then they live in that box until you move into that room to begin sorting there is helpful. And then the kinder, gentler organizing experts offer the fourth box, which is a maybe box. Maybe you're not sure if you can live without that book or statue or whatever item it is. So you put it in your maybe box and collect things there that you're not certain about. And then you can put the current day's date on the maybe box. And then I guess kind of like a fine wine, you can decide how long you're going to age your clutter, 3 months, 6 months, a year. And if somehow you have gone happily about your life without having to dig into that box, then that box can become a donation box.
So
that's the four-box method, but not everybody has a whole day or a weekend to spend weeding out their clutter. So I also offer the piece method, which is where you whittle away at things using a small area of space. Maybe you decide just to do one drawer of the dresser each night, and by the end of the week, the entire dresser can be weeded out and organized. And that's working with a small piece of space. And the other way to weed out is to do it in small chunks of time. I've found that clients consistently think it takes longer to tackle some of these projects than it actually does. So I'm a huge fan of trying to start a new behavior of spending as little as 10 minutes a day working on clutter rather than letting it evoke all those feelings of guilt and angst.
There was a thing that we learned a while back when being something about an executive's desk, never touch the same piece of paper three times. It said, you know, if you touch it once, you could leave it there. If you pick it up a second time, all right, you may review it. By the third time, it's either in the trash or in the file, or it's in some way dealt with. Otherwise, you would never keep it around. And they say it's a rule of three. Never touch the same piece of paper three times. If it's on your desk and you keep seeing it over and over again, it should be gone. It should be moved on in some kind of way. But,
right.
You know, this brings up the issue of consumerism. And I know you have an attitude towards it, and I know you, Stephanie, as well. Because I think Stephanie Dombra, who I know well, has a way of, you have a way of making sure you don't accumulate too much stuff, right? And with your children, you make sure that they're not, you know, out there with the rest of the world competing to have as many things as everybody else has.
I try not to buy. I'm a real firm believer in that.
In what?
Trying to simplify and not buy things that we think we need when we really probably don't need them. We just want them. And so I think that's a rule of thumb I use. Do you really need this item? And if you do, then we negotiate it.
Okay, so let's say you do need an item and you get it and now you have three items.
Well, I ask her, I'll say my daughter, you can sell the other ones. I make her sell things before she buys the next thing.
How does she sell them on eBay?
On Amazon.
On Amazon. How do you do that?
You can sell used items on Amazon.
Huh. Yeah. How do you like that? Mm-hmm. How industrious. Well, what do you think, Barbara?
I think that's a great idea that Stephanie does with her children. I try that with my kids as well. It's sort of a version of what they call the one-in, one-out rule,
yes.
Where if you're going to bring something into your house, say you picked up a sweater that you want to buy, or in the case of a child, a toy, then the child goes through the process of picking a toy that gets sold or donated to keep the room from becoming overrun with toys. And if they understand that process, it also helps with what Stephanie mentioned of determining do they really want it. If they know they have to give up a toy or a stuffed animal to bring home a different toy or stuffed animal, it helps facilitate a decision-making process, which is a good life skill to have.
And are they? Do you talk about unclutter mantras? I know we did the methods, but do you have an actual mantra? Is there something you actually say, like one in, one out?
Well, one in, one out is a clutter mantra. Sometimes it's also helpful to change the ratio if you're dealing with a backlog of clutter. Instead of one in, one out, think of it in terms of perhaps one in and two out. Or three.
Yeah, that's
out
what I would think.
Out.
I would think of that for myself. One in and two out. No, because there's so much stuff comes in. You know, there's so much nowadays. What's even worse about what comes in is the packaging it comes in. You know, I mean, when I think about how much stuff appears.
The waste with the products. And yeah,
the boxes and the stuff that gets delivered, you know. The disadvantage of having stuff delivered by mail is that you get with it all this additional clutter, including those popcorns, those things that they come packed in. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. Clutter can be pathological. Clutter can be okay. But, you know, sometimes we live a cluttered life in many forms. Sometimes it's not just your apartment that's cluttered. I often wonder if you go to a therapist's office and the office of the therapist is so disorganized that, you know, it's chaotic and disorganized and nobody knows where one thing is or another thing is. You could run a radio station like that perfectly fine, but you may not be able to run a therapist's office like that or a physician's office. If the physician has a cluttered office, right? Cluttered with people, cluttered appointments, cluttered everything. I don't think I would want to go there. I'd be afraid that he'd leave his wrench inside my heart somewhere when he was looking at me. You know, I would be afraid because sometimes it does tell you a lot about a person. When you meet somebody with a lot of clutter, you say to yourself, how much can this person focus on me? How much can they stay with me? How much can they identify me? And I think it's a sign. I think that's why in our society, there's a great deal of value given to people who show organization, even if they're not. That's why a showroom is usually clear. You know, that's why you don't see things laying around. That's why you try not to have too many things present, because you want to inspire confidence, and you do that by looking somewhat organized. But there are some people who just can't be organized. I mean, there are people who have clutter in their mind all the time. Like, for example, if you try to set a date with them, they say, yes, okay, I'll be there at 6:45, but I'm going to call you first, but I may have to go pick up the laundry first or something like that. And you see that, and you can say to yourself, okay, this may or may not happen.
Right.
Now, I think that sometimes it's just a sign of somebody who lives that way, which is perfectly fine, energetically. That's the way they live.
Mm-hmm.
At what level do you consider it to be a real, real problem, Barbara?
I think when it interferes with them living their lives the way they want to live their lives, and when it interferes with their relationships. We don't want our stuff to get between us and the people that we care about. So I guess I personally would define that, but I'm not the expert. I mean, at what point is it clinically defined as a pathology, and what do you recommend?
Well, I was thinking about people, and I think there are, I don't want to generalize, but what do you see between men and women, Barbara, as clients? Because often I think very organized men that I meet with as a professional will often describe how they want their home to be neat, and they organize it a certain way, and they're very successful across the board in their careers, in how they handle things, they follow through. So it's consistent. And a lot of women pay attention to detail, but what I find, some men will just ignore the clutter. It doesn't bother them the way it does a woman. And often I'll see, let's say the man has a diagnosis of attention deficit disorder and the woman doesn't. This can create a major wedge in relationships and if you're living with that person. So I would say that for some people, attention deficit could really be a problem related to clutter.
Well, Stephanie, how about me? You know my desk, you know the way I live, you know the amount of stuff I have going on all at once. How about that? How is that not a problem where you just...
Because it's in your working space, on your desks, in the area of your desks. The rest of the place you really want to present as beautiful, clean, clear, a space that's very much like a sanctuary. So it doesn't cause anxiety and aggravation for people
but
that walk in.
How can I function so well in a disorganized space, even on my desk?
Well, I think that your brain, you have this intense energy, and I'm going to call it the dopamine that we often refer back to. Barbara, this is a neurotransmitter if you're not familiar.
She's calling me a dope.
Okay, dopamine is a very important neurotransmitter that allows us to focus, to follow through, to give us energy. And so you have that, Armand, and that allows you to create and do all these things. And I have to disagree with you around that point when you said the three-time rule, if you don't touch a piece of paper and it's there, after a while it should be tossed out. On a creative desk, if a piece of paper is there and it's important and you know it's there, and I bet you do because I've seen you look for pieces of paper, Armand, and it's usually there, sometimes that piece of paper can be a very creative idea. And I know of a story where a man was able to develop an idea into a Nobel Peace Prize winning kind of idea. So it's, if you know where your stuff is on your desk, and most of the time that's how you operate, I'm not so sure that's clutter. It might not look good to some people, and it might not make a person feel good if they have to have a clear desk to organize and create things. I don't know what you find, Barbara, but some people love to know that they walk in and their dining room table is clear or the countertop is clear.
Sometimes it's helpful to have particular areas that you can keep clear and stay clear, and that's sort of necessary for mental health and peace of mind. The issue you mentioned before about men who want the house organized or clutter that bothers women that men can ignore, it does seem to run the gamut, that sometimes there are men who wish their spouse was more organized, and then there are women who wish their husband was more organized. Women, I think, do tend to be a little bit more visual, speaking in kind of general terms, and so we're more bothered if the kitchen cupboard door is open. It's harder for us to sit down and enjoy our meal, but I don't think that you can attribute it necessarily all to sex differences, and it can drive a wedge in the relationship. One of the things I suggest with dealing with a more cluttered spouse is to talk about it in terms of my problem rather than the spouse's problem, so it doesn't become a blame game. It's a matter of pointing out that it's difficult for me to prepare dinner if the contents of the pockets get dumped on the kitchen counter, or it's hard to set the table for dinner if there's a pile on the dining room table. And because partners like to help each other, and if we're aware of the frustrations or the interruption in performing daily life tasks, I think it makes the less tidy partner more inclined to help and pitch in rather than feeling attacked or blamed.
Well, you know, there's times that things bother you and times they don't. At the beginning of a romance, I could find any young couple laying amid strewn bed clothing with stuff all over the place and open cartons of food, and it doesn't matter. They're just making love all day, and disorganization is rampant, and it doesn't matter. As the chemistry changes over time, as the romance kinds to recede, as you begin to lose the passions, then you start to find fault with the other person and you find fault with the situation. What we found is that any animal in the world, when it starts to feel threatened, will tend to organize. It may organize itself by backing itself into a corner. It tries to isolate and organize under threat. Humans have this ability. If they get scared, almost every human, every anxious person I know, tries to line things up and get things set. Because when you're scared, you don't want to be looking at 100 things at once. You want to focus on one. So the attempt is always to organize and pull it together. However, if people at this point feel themselves ready to clear at least out the clutter, this is a very interesting way to go about it. Barbara Tako's book, Clutter Clearing Choices, which has a candle on the cover, which is one of the things of clutter that I live with the most, is candles, half-burned candles, candles around, all right? But were you a clutterer at one point, Barbara?
Yes, I actually, if you remember the television series The Odd Couple, I was the messy roommate, Oscar. And then I became acquainted with, before I married over two decades ago, my future mother-in-law back then, who was sort of a June Cleaver type person. And frankly, she kind of scared me. I wanted to keep up with her, and I started to realize that because she had a tighter ship than I did, she had time for her priorities, her faith, her family, her friends, and her interests. And that sort of caught my attention and made me decide to reduce some of my Oscar sorts of behaviors and become more like a Felix, because I realized it wasn't about trying to make my home look like the cover of a magazine. It was more about trying to make my life functional and free up time and energy for my priorities. So my book is sort of based on my own humorous experiences, and it also tries to throw out a variety of ideas, because we're all at different life stages and have different personalities, so I offer sort of a smorgasbord or buffet of ideas for people to pick and choose from. And I organized it seasonally, too, which is kind of unique, because I think we think about different types of clutter at different times of the year. When we're working on our taxes, we're struggling with our paper clutter and our filing systems in our households. As spring approaches and we're tired of winter and the walls have closed in, we're thinking about spring cleaning and weeding out and perhaps donating our items. And so I also put on my website, which is the same as the title of the book, clutterclearingchoices.com, I offer a place where people can sign up for a free monthly Clutter Clearing Tips newsletter to help kind of stay on track month by month. It's just a once-a-month reminder with some tasks that are seasonally appropriate and some ideas and resources to help keep people motivated and moving forward in the process. Because we've all weeded out, we've all straightened our desks, but it seems like the piles tend to regrow, and so monthly tips help people stay reminded and hopefully prevent the clutter areas from growing out of control.
Clutterclearingchoices.com, Barbara Tako. Barbara, thank you very much. Let me recommend that people get the book, unless they're going to leave the book laying around. You don't want to have another book laying around. This is Armand DeMille. Thank you for being there, Barbara.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. And this is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombro. We're going to be coming back and talking about some of the more pathological stuff, including compulsive hoarding and stuff like that, about the chemistry of the human brain. We'll also be taking your calls at 212-209-2900 after we get back. But, of course, we have a station break. And beyond the station break, we have magnificent music for you. You're listening to Purple Sky, which is the kind of music you'd hear in an Arabian bar. That's their Bar Groove album. Boo Sebu is the author, the artist. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. You know, there's a good example. Steph, you know, that's where disorganization turns into organization and music. You know, what is jazz? Jazz is not organized. Jazz is you play your line and you play your line and then you improvise in between. And the improvisation is never repeated twice. As I knew it when I was in that world, we just, you know, I can't remember anybody playing the same piece twice. You would play the basic part of it the same way.
Yeah, I think that it has to do with maybe the key that you're playing in and the rhythm.
Right.
It's predictable.
Keep that going and then...
It makes that feel like you can work off of that, and that works for listening to it. Otherwise, it can get to be like a cacophony. And I don't personally like that kind of jazz where it's absolutely all over the place.
Uh-huh. Well, even that, even if you do go all over the place, there seems to be a point of return. And now maybe this is a good clue for us, to have a tag, to have a place you run home to. You know, having a place you run home to, being totally disorganized, and then closing the doors of your home or closing the door of your car, feeling safe somewhere, isn't clutter. And all the hoarding and all the other mechanisms of obsessive compulsiveness, isn't it all about safety? Trying to feel safe, trying to feel comfortable inside yourself, trying to find a sense of inner peace. Obsessive compulsive disorder. A person is checking the locks and checking the lock. Did I lock the door? Did I lock the door? Did I lock the door? Over and over again. What's it about? Because I want to feel safe. Clutter. I want to leave everything around me. I can't get rid of anything because I won't feel safe if I get rid of it, especially with hoarding. Because around hoarding, people say, I'm going to keep this because I may need it. Meaning that if I need it, I won't be safe. So safety is a key factor with people. Now, a lot of people have said that people who had disorganized childhoods where they didn't feel really safe in childhood, and I know many who did feel safe in childhood, but many who didn't, they tend to always be looking for a safe spot, and they try to create it by crowding in their spaces. That's why they'll have too many relationships. That's why they'll have too many people, too many things. The acquisition, I think the thing you were talking about consumerism. Believe it or not, I think somebody is saying to themselves, if I have enough stuff, I'll eventually feel safe. And I wonder if there's not a part of the brain that is meant to monitor your level of safety. Like, I remember when we did the show on refugee syndrome, right, which I did with Roberta. And we were talking about the refugee syndrome, and we talked about how certain people have a sense of being refugees in the world, that they don't really have a family, they don't really belong to anything. And as a result of it, they had a number of disorders, specifically physical disorders related to the kidneys. That the primary factor of this refugee syndrome we identified were kidney disorders, because why kidney disorders? Because if you're a refugee, water becomes the most important thing in the world to you. Getting water, finding water, as we saw in Haiti, getting clean drinking water is essential. So a refugee will alter their kidneys, shut their kidneys down so they don't lose the water. And we would find that there was a medical correlation between people who had kidney and bladder disorders and people who didn't feel safe. Interesting stuff. Is there a place in the brain, is there a spot in the brain, do you think, Steph, that is a little spot that monitors your level of safety? We know we have parts that monitor our level of threat, level of excitement, but the level of safety, where you really feel okay, is that what relationships are about? Is having a loving relationship about being safe, about feeling safe in the world, having a partner?
I think it's very primitive. Most of what we work with is either our fear or a sense of safety. You know, are we safe walking down the street? Do we feel safe when we come into our home? And I don't know if this is exactly related, but that feeling of well-being and safety is related to our serotonin production. And then, of course, if our amygdala is firing away and we're afraid all the time.
Well, I know people who have random firings of their amygdala and they still feel safe. See, you could have a very active, you could be very active and still feel okay. But it's this thing. There must be a monitor up there, because how many of you listening can you say, do any of you feel safe ever? I met a man the other day. I sat with this man. He was a very nervous man. And I said to him, you know, you never feel safe ever. And I would say the majority of people that I have seen in my clinical practice have this one thing in common, the absence of safety. So when we're talking about hoarding, clutter, and all of the kind of strange little adaptions that we do, it's all meant to try to find a place where we could feel okay. And I think if you did brain scan technology, if you did brain scans on people, there must be a point that if you were to look at the brain stuff, you would see that there are heat sensors when a person feels in danger and cool sensors when they feel relaxed and they feel okay. Safe. Vacation. Safe. Get away from it. Safe. 212-209-2900 is our number here. We're going to be taking your calls. Let's talk about the orbital cortex. What about the orbital cortex? It's that part of the brain that is involved in decision-making and planning. And that part of the brain seems to be stressed to the max with people who are hoarders. Now, if you take somebody who's a hoarder and you were to hook them up to a brain thing and then start shredding their materials in front of them, they tried to see what would happen. And they found the people broke down. I mean, they just couldn't handle it mentally. Their brains began to misfire. They had almost psychotic reactions. How could you be shredding this? That's how much the attachment was. Whereas many of us think if we know of somebody who's a hoarder, what you should do is go in there with a bulldozer and pick up everything and just get rid of it. What we're saying is you're not understanding. This person's safety got attached to that bunch of newspapers. And yes, they could live without them. But the newspapers that are stacked up to the ceiling, they become an extension of the self.
Well, I also have seen with the hoarding that they can show activity in the brain with a scan in that, here's the other big word, we said a couple of them last week, the bilateral anterior ventromedial prefrontal cortex. Can you imagine?
And everybody's got them. Could you let's do it again? The bilateral prefrontal suborbital multicultural orbix.
It's just a part. It's just a part of the prefrontal cortex that's overactive.
I know, but
as
I want
a hoarder.
The full name.
You want the whole full name
yes,
again?
Yes, I want to have it in my bathroom wall.
Bilateral.
Bilateral.
Which means two sides.
Yes, good. Thank you.
Anterior.
In the back.
Which is in the back. Ventromedial. Which I don't know what that means.
That's in the middle of the back.
Okay, medial, okay. Prefrontal cortex, which is right on the back of our forehead, right underneath our forehead, or right in back of our skin of our forehead.
So this is in the back of the front.
The back of the prefrontal cortex
on
both sides.
It's in the back of the front on both sides in the middle.
And this is the part where we're using reasoning, Armand. We're making decisions. We're trying to take care of business. Something about hoarding, it's actually organic. Something's going on in the brain for people who hoard. And I don't know what comes first. It's hard to know.
Right. Is the activity, well, what
well, culturally, Armand, think about this. There's a term that I know many people maybe over the age of 40 that know this, depression-era mentality.
Yeah.
And back then, in the 30s, people didn't accumulate things. They didn't have things. So anything they had, they kept. And to this day, I mean, my mother's 80, and she has this kind of mentality. You save everything. And she's not a hoarder, but she has this idea that we might really use this again. So she literally still has pans from 50 years ago, the same pants that I saw as a little girl. So it's a mindset that can go off if you happen to have a hoarding mentality or a hoarding organic brain syndrome, we'll call it. And then you put that together with something like that error when you have to save your things.
Oh, certainly. My Aunt Rita had a collection of plastic takeout order dishes. She saved every one. Whenever she saw one in anybody's house, she took it home. There was no such thing as throwing it away. But think about what she was doing for the world. She certainly was saving our planet from some of this stuff that would have been just become part of it. 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls right now. What about that safety and hoarding? And what about you and collecting things? One of the things they have to say about people who are disorganized in their clutter is that it's very hard to feel safely in love. 212-209-2900. We'll take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I just wanted to say me in relation to clutter, usually what it means for me is, well, if you leave it, it's depression. And to undo the clutter reorders my life to a great degree. And it's also a major exercise in actualizing function. Because usually when you have clutter, when I have clutter, usually I'm not doing much else. I just fortunately took a bath. Thank heavens. Fantastic.
So when you're cluttered, you feel like you're just not doing anything. You think it's part of your depression. That makes sense.
It,
of course it makes sense.
Hello?
Yes.
I not only think it's clear. Because when I have clutter, I have a dog, so usually in the apartment you could see the need for to vacuum, to like, all these things. For me, are an exercise in reordering your life. Because when I allow for clutter, it's usually because there's a whole bunch of other things I haven't taken care of.
So by the time you
laundry, or I haven't bought this, or I haven't bought that for my dog, all kind of things. I'm retired now, but I'm just saying that even if it isn't depression, it's a great exercise. It's a good place to start because it's usually right where you are, home.
Beautiful. Thank you
so much for calling in. And
it
reaches out.
It
generates like when you throw a rock in a puddle, a pebble, you know, how do you call it?
A pebble in a pond. It ripples.
Pardon?
It ripples.
Sends
out ripples.
Your whole life, and if you keep it up that way, especially where you work, you will also bring that to your job, and it'll color your life. It'll improve it.
Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you.
You know, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Didn't know if he could hear me or not. Yes, it's true. I mean, what he's saying is by the time he gets to noticing the clutter, he's coming out of his depression. You see, when you're in your depression, you don't see it. You know, they've done one association with overweight and clutter. And they say, you know, if you think about it, what is fat? Fat is the accumulation on the body of something you think you may need for the future, your body thinks. If you're a bear and you eat a lot of salmon and you keep eating it and eating it and eating it, you're going to go into hibernation. You become a fat bear and then you lay down and you live on it. Well, fat is one of nature's ways of us preserving stuff to use when there's going to be not so much stuff around. We, of course, you know, we humans get too fat. Because we, even though we may not be starving, it just becomes padding. But people who tend to pad their bodies also tend to pad their homes. And they pad the things around them. And some of the people who have worked on weight loss have said, first thing you do is clear your house. Start cleaning your house. Start clearing your house. As you're clearing your body, as you're dieting, clear your desk. Clear a room, clear your closet, because they feel there's an association and a major support by doing both at the same time. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm Cassie from Brooklyn.
Hello, Cassie.
And I just started listening to you because I just found you in September, and you have added such another dimension to my psychological life, which is I've been in therapy for the last couple of years, and your talk today about clutter is one of my problems. There's no fish bones underneath the papers, but I need a pay job, so I've got papers up to the ceiling. And I started to throw stuff out last week, and this is what was so amazing, is that I've been getting sick as a dog as I've been throwing stuff out.
Now, what do you think the sickness is? You mean like sickness like...
My back hurts, my stomach is queasy.
But I think you've always had a trouble getting rid of things, haven't you?
No. I used to, first of all, I never accumulated a lot of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And because my mother was a neat person, the whole family are neat people. They all have houses, so they can put a lot of stuff in there, you know. And most of them had big houses, so it was a lot of stuff. But it was always organized, neat, and very elegant.
And you liked it. You liked it that way, Cassie?
Yeah. I really did.
Yeah.
And
so you want to give yourself that present because it's a value that you have. And when you do it, here's another thought. It connects you back to your family because sometimes when you're alone, you look for ways to feel like you're back home. And having a messy house doesn't make you feel very safe. It reminds you that you're not home. So as you clean it out, in a way you reconnect with your mother.
Which I would like to do.
Yes, I hear you. You need to do.
And that's why, you know, all of a sudden, I just got, but the other thing that you said, and I just wanted to let you know how truthful your stuff, your information is, because I gained, I lost all the weight, and I gained 60 pounds back, and all of a sudden, the last 3 weeks, I decided I got to go on a diet and I got to clean this place out.
Amazing, right?
Yeah.
They go together.
It was like, and I'm serious about it.
Mm-hmm. Good for you.
And the place is, you know, I can see differences and it's kind of startling.
Yeah, you know, there's one, let me teach you a trick. There's a trick that I have that I've had my whole life that I love. Make one corner absolutely clean. There should be one corner in everybody's house where there is nothing on the floor, nothing in the corner. Just a clear corner. Nowadays, most people don't live with clear corners because they put things in corners. Find yourself a corner, and every time you get tempted to put something in that corner, you don't allow it. But every time you look at that corner, you think of it as, that's the clear part of me. That's what I do. Hey, listen, thank you for becoming part of our family at WBAI, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for being there so that I may join you.
Yes.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. It'll be here in just a second.
Not yet.
212-209-2900. So one of the things that they found, why am I hearing piano music? No.
Okay.
All right. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. Thanks for the wonderful show, as always. I need help. My place is a total mess, and everything that you've talked about basically the inner self needing to heal itself, it feels like quite a hurdle for me to get over, and it's just cleaning up my place, but it really does change my whole perception of how I'm approaching my own life. But I really don't know where to start because I'll clean it up and then it'll just... This isn't about cleaning my room.
No, it isn't, of course.
Cleaning out my head, but I'm asking you for help because I don't know how to maintain this.
Yeah, I hear you. You feel scared, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a little scared because a lot of the stuff you said hit home. You know, I got a lot of people in my life. I've had a lot of relationships, and I really don't feel safe.
You sound depressed. You sound like you're, you know, you're in the bottom of a pit somewhere. It looks like you're trying to struggle to get out of it, and you just don't know which way to turn. And I'm saying to you, you know, have you had any help at all? Have you had anybody that you've tried to speak to about it?
It may be. Personally?
Yeah.
No, I usually just turn to my family. And
yeah, it may be time. It may be time to get outside of the family. You know, it may be time to try to find somebody else who could give you at least an outside ear. Just like you like listening to the program, you know? There should be somebody who can reach to you on a level other than your family, because the family, they're invested. They have an investment in what goes on with you. And it sounds to me like you're really crying out for help.
I am, but I also know that I'm strong enough to...
No, don't believe it. That thing is the thing that we were taught when we were kids. You're strong enough to suffer through it on your own. You know?
Fight is the word I would use.
Yeah, I know. But it's also nice to have somebody to fight with, you know? Two guys in battle, much better than one. Hey, listen, I wish I could spend more time with you. If you ever want to call me, just give me a call or send me an email, armand@brainlink.com, and maybe I could help you a little more because we're just out of time right now.
Okay, armand@brainlink.com.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. What's your name?
My name's John.
John, I'll be speaking to you. Thank you for calling in. Okay, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We got to be going. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. The website is thepositivemind.com or WBAI.org. And like Michael said, you know, if you go to the website, if you go to WBAI.org, there'll be a chance for you to still make contributions to the station, a station that offers you this kind of programming.
Anniversary of the war on Gaza, the butcher Gabi Eskenazi is coming to New York on March 9th,